So our purpose today is to explore and understand Kara Theodori's condition, which is our new way of thinking about a measurable set. We see that a set E satisfies Kara Theodori's condition if E and its complement split every set A in an additive fashion. The sets that satisfy this condition are the ones that we shall think of as the measurable sets. The next lemma shows that the task of checking measurability can be simplified a little bit. A set E satisfies the Kara Theodori condition if and only if for each set A, with the outer measure of A finite, we have that the outer measure of A is bigger than or equal to the outer measure of A intersect E plus the outer measure of A take away E. Okay, so Kara Theodori's original condition was an equality, but we're saying now that we only have to look at sets A with finite outer measure, and we only have to show one inequality instead. So now we'll prove that this is sufficient, and it's pretty simple. Proof. Since A intersect E and A take away E are disjoint and have union A, we see from part D of the theorem that we always have the inequality outer measure of A is less than or equal to outer measure of A intersect E plus outer measure of A take away E. So if the single inequality is satisfied, then we actually have equality, and that's what we want. And observe in passing that our inequality is trivial in case the outer measure of A is infinite, so it's only necessary to think about the case outer measure of A is finite. And that's all there is to say about that. Now here's Kara Theodori's theorem. Kara Theodori was really a great mathematician. He had a lot of good ideas. He played a really seminal role in the development of measure theory. So let M star be the outer measure, which we've been considering for a while. Then the set capital script L of all subsets of R that satisfy Kara Theodori's condition is a sigma algebra of subsets of the reals. Furthermore, the restriction of the outer measure M star to L is a measure on L. So this is great. See, this tells us that we've constructed here a new way to think about Lebesgue measure theory. So, proof of this theorem. It is clear that the empty set satisfies our condition. Also, if E satisfies the condition, so does the complement of E. Therefore, the family of sets that satisfy the Kara Theodori condition satisfies properties 1 and 2 of our definition. We next show that if E and F satisfy our condition, then so does E intersect F. This is the case because since E is in capital script L, we have that the outer measure of A equals the outer measure of A intersect E plus the outer measure of A take away E for any A in the reals. And because F is in capital script L, we have the outer measure of A intersect F equals the outer measure of A intersect E intersect F plus the outer measure of A intersect E intersect complement of F. So that's applying the Kara Theodori condition in a slightly more subtle way than usual, using the set A intersect E to play the role of A. Thus, the outer measure of A equals the outer measure of A intersect E intersect F plus the outer measure of A intersect E intersect complement of F plus the outer measure of A intersect the complement of E. But since E is an element of capital script L, we have an addition that the outer measure of A intersect the complement of the set E intersect F equals the outer measure of A intersect the complement of E intersect F intersect E plus the outer measure of A intersect the complement of E intersect F intersect complement of E, and this equals the outer measure of A intersect the complement of F intersect E plus the outer measure of A intersect the complement of E. In conclusion, the outer measure of A equals the outer measure of A intersect E intersect F plus the outer measure of A intersect the complement of E intersect F for all sets A, and therefore E intersect F satisfies Kara Theodori's condition, and so it belongs to capital script L. So capital script L is closed under intersections. Since capital script L contains the complement of sets in L, we see from De Morgan's law that if E and F are in L, then union F is in L. Furthermore, if E intersect F equals the empty set, then it follows from the fact that E satisfies our condition with A replaced by A intersect E union F and F equals F intersect complement of E, that A intersect E union F equals A intersect E union F intersect E plus A intersect E union F intersect complement of E, and that's A intersect E plus A intersect F. By induction, we then see that if E1, E2 through EK belong to L and are pairwise disjoint, then E1 union E2 union dot 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 union EK belongs to L, and A intersect the set E1 union E2 union through EK equals the outer measure of A intersect E1 plus the outer measure of A intersect E2 plus dot 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 plus the outer measure of A intersect EK for all A in the reals. Now, our task is to show that L is a sigma algebra and M star is countably additive on L. To this end, let capital EJ be a pairwise disjoint sequence of sets in L, and let E be the union of the EJs. Certainly, Fn, which is the summation from the union from J equal 1 to n of EJ, belongs to L for all n in the natural numbers. And furthermore, if A is any subset of the reals, then the outer measure of A is the outer measure of A intersect N plus Fn plus the outer measure of A intersect the complement of Fn. And that's the outer measure of the union from J equal 1 to N of A intersect EJ plus the outer measure of A intersect the complement of Fn. And that's equal to the sum from J equals 1 to N of the outer measure of A intersect EJ plus the outer measure of A intersect the complement of Fn. Since Fn is a subset of E, we see that A intersect complement of Fn contains A intersect the complement of E for all n in the natural numbers. Hence, the outer measure of A is bigger than or equal to summation J equal 1 to N outer measure of A intersect EJ plus the outer measure of A intersect the complement of E. This inequality implies that the outer measure of A is bigger than or equal to the summation from J equal 1 to infinity the outer measure of A intersect EJ plus the outer measure of A intersect the complement of E, just because the infinite sum is the limit of the finite sums. It follows now from countable sum additivity of M star that the outer measure of A intersect E equals the outer measure of the union from J equal 1 to infinity of A intersect EJ, which is less than or equal to the sum from J equal 1 to infinity of the outer measure of A intersect EJ. Thus, we have the outer measure of A bigger than or equal to the outer measure of A intersect E plus the outer measure of A intersect complement of E. And in view of the above lemma, this implies that E is in capital script L. So we now see that capital script L is a sigma algebra. What is more, if we take A equal E in our theorem, in our theorems, then we have that the outer measure of E equals the summation from J equals infinity, the outer measure of the EJs, and that shows that M star is countably additive on capital script L, as we wish to prove. Now we have a new definition. This kind of sums up everything we've been saying so far. Let M star be the outer measure, as usual, and the sigma algebra capital script L of subsets of R satisfying the Carathéodory condition is called the Lebesgue sigma algebra of R. A set E in capital script L is called Lebesgue measurable. And the restriction of M star to L, which we now call M, is called the Lebesgue measure on R. So because of this definition, we're going to stop using a star and just call our measure M instead of M star, because we no longer think of it as outer measure. Now it's a measure. And it's a measure on a sigma algebra, capital script L. So we have an entirely new way now to think about measure theory. Remark, since M is the restriction of M star to the sigma algebra, capital script L, we know that the measure of E equals M star of E for every E in L. Most of the time, when we know that a set E is measurable, we should write M E instead of M star E. Proposition, if I is an interval in R, then I is measurable, and the measure of I is the length of I. We'll give the proof for an open interval and leave the case of the other intervals for you to think about. We saw in the lemma that it is enough to show that if A is a subset of R so that the outer measure of A is finite, then the outer measure of A is bigger than or equal to the outer measure of A intersect I plus the outer measure of A take away I. Let N be a natural number. Let I sub N be the set of all X in I, so that the distance of x to the complement of I is bigger than 1 over n. So of course, In is a subset of I, and since I take away In lies in the union of two cells, each of which has side length 1 over n, then the outer measure of I take away In goes to 0 as n tends to infinity. Notice that A is a superset of A intersect In, union A take away I, and that the distance from A intersect In A take away I is at least 1 over n. Thus we have from the proposition that the outer measure of A is bigger than or equal to the outer measure of A intersect I n union A take away I, which equals the outer measure of A intersect I n plus the outer measure of A take away I. But we also know that A intersect I equals A intersect I n union A intersect I take away I n. And it follows from the subadditivity and monotone character of M star, then, that M star of A intersect I n is less than or equal to M star of A intersect I, less than or equal to M star A intersect I n plus M star A intersect I take away I n. That's all pretty obvious set theory. Thus, we have the outer measure of A intersect I is the limit as n goes to infinity of the outer measure of A intersect I n. So taking the limit in equation 1, we have the outer measure of A is bigger than or equal to the outer measure of A intersect I plus the outer measure of A take away I. And this shows by the lemma that I is measurable. It's an easy calculation to see that the measure of I equals the length of I. Certainly any open covering of I has total length at least Li. And it's a simple matter to produce coverings with total length less than L of I plus epsilon for any epsilon bigger than 0. And that does the job. So it's really very hands-on proof. So what we have accomplished thus far is both interesting and valuable. Namely, we have a measure M defined on a sigma algebra capital script L of sets that agrees with the length function L on intervals. So we now know that capital script B and capital script L, where capital script B is the Borel sets, and we've succeeded in extending script L from the Borel sets to the notably larger collection of sets, capital script L. We will spend some time now to see how large capital script L actually is. It's conceivable that there's another measure defined on L that also agrees with L on intervals, but now we show this is not the case. Theorem. If mu is a measure defined on the sigma algebra L that satisfies mu of L I equals length of I for all open intervals I, then mu is in fact the measure M. So in a sense, then M is unique. Proof. For n a natural number, let I sub n be the open interval minus n. Let E be an element of capital script L, any set with E a subset of I sub n, and let J sub k be a sequence of open intervals so that E is in the union of the J sub k's. Since mu is a measure and mu of jk equals length of jk for all k, we see that the measure mu measure of E is less than or equal to the mu measure of the union of the jk's, which is less than or equal to the sum of the mu measures of the jk's, which is the sum of the lengths of the jk's, and thus we have that the measure mu measure of E is less than or equal to m star of E, which equals m e for all measurable sets E in I sub n. Since mu and m are additive, we have that the mu measure of E plus the mu measure of I n take away E equals the mu measure of I n, which is the mu measure, which is the m measure of I n, which is the m measure of E plus the m measure of I n take away E. Because all these terms are finite, and the mu measure of E is less than or equal to the m measure of E, and the mu measure of I n take away E is less than or equal to the m measure of I n take away E, we may conclude that the mu measure of E equals the m measure of E for all measurable sets E in I sub n. Notice that an arbitrary measurable set E can be written as the union of a pairwise disjoint sequence EJ of bounded sets defined by E1 equals E intersect I1, EJ equals E intersect IJ take away IJ I sub J minus 1 for J bigger than 1. Since mu of EJ equals M of EJ for all J in the natural numbers, it follows that the mu measure of E is the sum of the mu measures of the EJs, which is the sum of the M measures of the EJs, which is M of E. In conclusion, mu and M agree on all measurable sets. And that is what we wanted to know. We'll wrap up this lecture with two useful and intuitively obvious facts about Lebesgue measure. The first one is this proposition. If E and F are Lebesgue measurable sets, and if E is a subset of F, then the measure of E is less than or equal to measure of F. If in addition the measure of E is finite, then the measure of F take away E is the measure of F minus the measure of E. And the proof is straightforward, since M is additive, and since we know that F is equal to E union F take away E, and E intersect F take away E is empty, then we have that the measure of F is the measure of E plus the measure of F takeaway E. And because the measure of F takeaway E is bigger than or equal to zero, we conclude that the measure of F is bigger than or equal to the measure of E. If the measure of E is finite, then we can subtract the measure of E from both sides of the above equation to obtain that the measure of F takeaway E equals the measure of F minus the measure of E. And then now we have a theorem, and I think this is the end of today's lecture. If EJ is an increasing sequence of Lebesgue measurable sets, then the measure of the union of the EJs is the limit of the measure of the EJs. And if FJ is a decreasing sequence of Lebesgue measurable sets, and if the measure of the first one is finite, then the measure of the intersection of the FJs is the limit of the measure of the FJs. For a proof, if MEK is plus infinity for some k, then both sides of our equation are plus infinity, so we may as well assume that the measure of EJ is finite for all j. Let A1 equal E1 and AJ equals EJ take away EJ minus 1 for j bigger than 1, then AJ is a pairwise disjoint sequence of measurable sets, so that EJ is the union from n equals 1 to j of AN, and the union from j equals 1 to infinity of EJ is the union from j equals 1 to infinity of AJ. Since M is countably additive, we see that the measure of the union of EJs is the measure of the union of the AJs, which is the sum of the measures of the AJs, which is the limit as p goes to infinity of summation n equal 1 to p of the measure of the AJs, or the ANs. By the theorem, we see that the measure of AN equals the measure of EN. Take away the measure of EN minus 1 for n bigger than 1. Hence, the finite sum telescopes, and we have that the measure of the union from j equal 1 to infinity of EJ is the limit as p goes to infinity of the measure of EP. We conclude that formula A is proved. For B, let EJ equal F1 take away FJ for J in the natural numbers. Then EJ is an increasing sequence of measurable sets. If we apply part A of the present theorem, then we may infer that the measure of the union of the EJs is the limit of the measure of the EJs, which is the limit as n goes to infinity of measure of F1 take away measure of Fn, which is measure of F1 take away the limit as n goes to infinity of the measure of Fn. Since the union from j equals 1 to infinity of EJ equals F1 take away the intersection from n equals 1 to infinity of Fn, we may conclude from the theorem that the measure of the union from j equal 1 to infinity of EJ is the measure of F1 minus the measure of the intersection from n equal 1 to infinity of Fn, and we can conclude this discussion by combining the last two equations to obtain the desired inequality for part B. That's the end of today's lecture. Thank you.